Warning, the Stone Age Gamer includes a lot of bad language. Cover your mother ears.
Good evening and welcome to episode 141 of the Stone Age Gamer podcast for the week of March 10th, 2017. I am Chris Randazzo, and joining me, as always, is the satisfying clicky noise, Dan Ryan.
There's really nothing better.
There really isn't. Tonight we're going to talk about what we think of the Nintendo Switch, or actually we're going to talk to Dan about what I think of the Nintendo Switch.
I'm just going to listen for a while. I have one thing to say about it, and we'll get there.
It's out. I have one. Dan and I have a great many thoughts. But before we go any further, here's your weekly reminder that you can email us at mail@geekade.com. Let us know what you think of the show, what topics you want us to discuss in the future, or just say hello, because we always want to hear from you, the listener. So, Dan, what's new with you?
Not a damn thing, Chris.
Not a damn thing?
Not a damn thing. Good puns.
Good night, everybody.
My roommate in college.
Not getting better than that.
My roommate in college, my buddy John, used to make mix CDs, and he would call them a goddamn mix, and I always thought that was very funny.
That's clever.
It was clever.
All right, so let's get down to brass tacks here. The Nintendo Switch is finally here. It is in my home, and it was in my hands just a few minutes ago. Now, I do have something I want to clarify with Dan real quick. Now, earlier after I got it, Dan asked me how fast the transfer was when you plug it into the dock and how quick it is on TV. And so I sent him a live video of me doing it. And I wanted to say to Dan that it's actually a little faster than that.
Okay.
It's probably at least a full second faster than that. I forgot that my TV is weird. I have a... My house was struck by lightning a while back,
sure.
And it fried all of the HDMI ports on my TV.
Nice.
So I have this very strange setup that goes through. It runs the HDMI signals from my devices through a component converter, and then that runs into the TV. And that actually, changing from one signal to the other, that actually takes a little bit of time,
right,
when I'm
right.
like switching devices and stuff. Like, I'll turn something on for the first time, I won't catch, like, it'll be on for a second or two before the TV catches it. So yeah, it's actually a bit faster than that.
It's not the instantaneous switch that the commercial would have you believe, which I don't think anybody honestly thought it would be, but
no, it's
still pretty quick.
It's near instantaneous.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I've seen videos of people with like actual functioning TVs do it, and it's near instantaneous.
With
and
real
and
big
because
boy
it's
TVs.
So fast, it has a built-in like game pause. So when you plug it into something else, it pauses the game and asks you to press buttons on whatever controller you're using. So it doesn't like if you're in mid fight or something. Like say you're riding a horse and you don't want to ride off a cliff.
Sure.
You switch mid game there, you won't die. It's very, very clever. It's very clever. The actual story of me getting my Switch was fun. I had a heck of a night at Walmart getting it. I'll put a link to it in the show notes. I wrote the story on the Stone Age Gamer blog. I actually wrote stories for every Nintendo console I've ever gotten on the Stone Age Gamer blog over the last month or so, and those were really fun to write. And I wasn't planning on writing one about the Switch, but my Walmart experience was, it was a Walmart experience.
So the
short of it is that nobody knew what the hell was going on, and but I got my reserve system. I got my Pro Controller, which is really quite fantastic, the Pro Controller. I'm very impressed with the hardware itself. Let's see, where do I even begin? Before I go any further, do you have any specific questions you want me to answer about the way the Switch works or anything?
The only two things that I've seen online that give me pause. Well, one of them gives me pause. And the other one gives me a pregnant pause, if you will. Mm. Slightly longer pause. I have relatively large hands.
Mm-hmm.
Very un-Trumpian hands. And I have heard that if your hands are bigger than like 6.5 inches from middle finger to wrist, that the Joy-Con will not be entirely comfortable Now, I'm assuming that you have not measured your hands recently.
No, but I'm looking at it. There's definitely... Well, let's do it. Let's see. I got a ruler over here. All right. Let's see. Middle finger to wrist, you're wondering?
Middle finger to wrist, yeah. But your hand has to be laying flat.
Flat.
Like flat on a surface.
Not
a tablet surface, but like any surface will do.
From the tip of my middle finger down to my wrist, it's 7.5 inches.
Okay. How are the Joy-Cons in your hands? Because mine are a little bigger than that. And the article that I read said that everybody, it was a Kotaku article, and everybody in the office whose hands were bigger than like 6.5 inches didn't love the feel of the Joy-Cons when they were separated from a thing.
Let's see. There's two ways to answer that. Thing number one is if you're holding it sideways, as in like one player has one and the other player has the other, it is so much better than you imagine it being, but it's not perfect. It's not
sure.
It's not going to be comfortable. Like it's just not. But it's not going to be. I can't describe it. I can't explain it. But it's so much less uncomfortable than you can possibly imagine it being.
Okay.
Like you look at it and you're like, "There's no way this is going to work." But I downloaded the demo for Snipper Clips, and that's how I was playing it with my niece, and I was genuinely shocked at how well I was able to function with it, and especially with a game as simplistic as Snipper Clips, where the controls are as simple as Snipper Clips, like that also helps. Like I would never want to play Street Fighter with that.
Yeah, that sounds like a nightmare.
Actually, might be a fun challenge, but who knows? When Street Fighter comes out, I'd love to actually give it a try. It is definitely better with the Joy-Con grips on them, little things that come in the box, which I had a real hard time finding. They're really hidden in there. I got home and I was messing with all the accessories and putting everything together, and I thought, wait a minute, aren't there Joy-Con grips supposed to be in here? And I'm looking all throughout the box, and so there are these two little compartments, one at the bottom, one at the top inside the box, and both of them are in those different compartments. So like they're not together in the box. They're two individually packed things on opposite ends in these little tiny compartments in the box. It's very oddly packaged, but they definitely do feel better when you're holding them on their own with that. Now, if you're holding one in each hand, that's a totally different animal. If you're holding one in each hand playing, I'll call it Wii Remote Nunchuck style, it's quite comfortable. It's really, really good. Because at that point, you've got enough of a grip of, like, it feels like you're holding, like, a half of a PlayStation controller. Because their vertical, I guess their vertical being is about as vertical as tall as a PlayStation controller. So it feels like you're holding that, but it's been split in half, and you're just holding one in each hand. It's a pretty comfortable way to play, but nothing beats the Pro Controller, like not even close. The Pro Controller is, first off, it's got an actual D-pad on it, which is a necessity for me. The analog sticks themselves, they don't turn as deeply as you expect analog sticks to. It's not a problem. It's never been a problem to me in the amount of time that I've spent with it, but it's an odd sensation. It's not necessarily bad. It just takes a second to kind of wrap your head around the fact that there's not as much give on the analog sticks. Whereas the Pro Controller, it does have like as much as an analog stick that moves as much as you would expect it to. The buttons, the actual face buttons, are considerably larger on the Pro Controller than I think they've ever been on a Nintendo controller ever. They're these just giant meaty buttons.
They're all the A button from the GameCube controller.
They're smaller than that.
Big green button.
they're smaller than the green button on the GameCube controller, but they're bigger than like Super Nintendo buttons.
Okay.
They're very nice. It took a little bit to get used to because they're just so damn meaty, but I like that about them. They're pretty nice. It is a little jarring going back and forth between like say if you're doing the Joy-Cons or just holding it handheld wise, and then going back to the Pro Controller, just take a second of just like readjusting yourself to, oh yeah, this is a good controller. It also, the Pro Controller feels considerably nicer than Everything dealing with the Switch feels nicer, feels more expensive, more high tech than anything on the Wii U. It feels and looks like a piece of tech, whereas the Wii U kind of feels like a toy.
Yeah.
Like
well, that actually leads into my second thing.
Yes.
And that is the screen.
Uh-huh.
Plastic.
What screen? The screen. Oh, yeah.
The tablet screen.
Is
plastic. It? Yeah.
Oh, didn't even notice.
That concerns me, not for performance issues, because, like, plastic touchscreen is just, like, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But with the portability as a key feature of this,
mm-hmm.
a plastic screen, well, it's just really easy to scratch.
Well, to that effect, it is very easy to scratch. I saw online that there were people that had noticed their docks were actually scratching up their screen.
Mm-hmm.
And so I took out mine, and lo and behold, it wasn't scratching it, but it was getting there. There were two spots on the bottom of the screen that were getting scuffed up. I was able to wipe them clean, like flawless, but
right.
It took a little elbow grease. Like, it's rubbing up against the inside of that thing. I find it very strange that there's no kind of protection. It's just that screen going
weird.
Against the plastic. Like, you'd think there'd be some kind of felt, something in there that would stop it from, would stop the friction from being a problem. So I went out and bought a screen protector immediately.
Yeah.
So once you have a screen protector, which I guess is kind of a good idea to have anyway, like should have bought one in the first place.
Yeah.
Now it's no longer an issue, except the fact that I didn't apply it very well. There's a big fucking bubble in the middle of my screen. But
well,
I don't play it handheld that often. And when I do, it's really not that noticeable when it's on. It's really noticeable when it's off. But
Yeah. I found that very curious, and probably just came in as a cost saving.
Oh, I'm kind so of thing. Sure of it. Yeah. A glass screen on that would have definitely cost them a lot more.
But like that is like I would really honestly I would hate to see this system get torpedoed for something like that of like, well, I bought it for the kids, and you know, because like it's a Nintendo and kids play Mario and whatever, and the screen is fucking ruined like a month into this thing because kids are rough on shit.
Yeah, but I mean, the DS had plastic screens. The Vita has a plastic screen. I mean,
yeah, well, and that thing's not very popular.
That's very true. But I mean, I don't think there's ever been a gaming machine that's had a glass screen like that. I mean, that's very much a tablet thing. And even then, all tablets don't have glass screens, do they? I don't know a lot about tablets.
I don't know. I have an iPad. So
yeah, I have an iPad. My wife has an iPad, so that's all fancy and glass.
That's what I know. Yeah,
I wouldn't have even have expected it to be glass. to be honest with you, it never even occurred to me for them to have made it glass.
I don't know. Like I said, it's not like a deal breaker or anything. I found it. You know,
it's a different. It's an interesting point though, because it's a different kind of durability. Because
right.
If you drop a Switch with a plastic screen, it's never going to shatter the way a glass screen would.
Right.
So it's more susceptible to scratching, but it's less susceptible to shattering. That's an interesting... I never thought about that.
Yeah, I don't know.
All right.
Just a thing.
It hasn't been a problem. I've rarely used the touchscreen for things other than entering in numbers or anything. I do love the fact that it's living up to the promise of the Wii U that never delivered. Like, mm-hmm. I can play it anywhere in my house. I brought it to work with me the other day. It's great. Like, I can just play Zelda in bed, and it's wonderful. And this is something that nobody's talking about that makes such a huge difference for me. And I don't know how this is on PlayStation 4, but the games suspend. Like, I turn off, like I you don't just flat out turn it off. I just put it into sleep
rest mode. Yeah.
And as soon as I wake it up, it's like a 3DS where it is, mm-hmm. I don't have to go back to the title screen or reload the game. It is exactly where I left it.
Yeah, that's the way the PS4 is. Like, you can switch from, you know, like we'll be watching television or whatever, like using the PlayStation View app, and then like, all right, I'm gonna exit out of this and switch over to keep playing Rise of the Tomb Raider, and as soon as I fire it up, it picks up right where it left off. Mm-hmm. Like without any hesitation, like you just jump right back into the game.
Yeah, that's awesome. The first time I've had a console that does that. You know, Wii U did not do that. It was every time you wanted to stop doing something, like you could suspend your NES games or whatever, but you'd still have to like load up those games and whatnot. And that's another thing about Switch. It is lightning fast, especially in comparison to the Wii U. Like, because the Wii U had a big problem with that. Like going from one app to the other was just... Loading times in that thing.
We just rehooked the Wii U up in the playroom for the kids, like plugged into the TV. And when we were cleaning the playroom, we went to boot up the Netflix app and like got bored, made a sandwich halfway through, like watched some shit on our phones for a little bit. It was like, oh, eventually I'll watch The West Wing on here, but not right now.
It takes it. The that poor old Wii U takes its time. And the Switch is not like that. It is a far more elegant thing than the Wii U. Other hardware things worth noting, the Joy-Con grip, again, surprisingly comfortable. Like, that thing doesn't look like it's going to be comfortable in the least, and it actually works really well.
The rectangle you slide them onto?
Yeah, exactly that. That thing looks like it's going to feel like a Dreamcast controller, and it really doesn't.
It really does. It is not an attractive...
No, it's not, but it's so functional hardware, and it's got that cute puppy dog thing with the ears. But no, it's functional. I used it used it for the first time this evening. I heard about the whole region free thing and all you have to do is create a Nintendo account that's set in Japan.
Right.
And I knew they had a demo for Puyo Puyo Tetris on the Japanese eShop.
Right.
So I was like, I need to download that because that's one of my most anticipated games. I've been wanting that game for years since it came out on friggin' Wii U in Japan. And so I downloaded the demo of it, which was a real easy process, just logging in as my Japanese account right on the Japanese eShop. Couldn't read a damn thing, but having spent a little bit of time in the American eShop, I knew where everything was, like just kind of based on the shapes of things.
Right.
So I downloaded the demo for... Puyo Puyo Tetris, and the first time I played it, I played it in handheld mode with my son sitting next to me. And the thing that was genuinely surprising to me was this was the first time I had used the four buttons as a D-pad, and I was like, oh boy, this is going to be a disaster. And it really wasn't. I was so shocked at how fast I was playing Tetris without an actual D-pad. It was just four buttons, and it was really quite nice. I was so surprised that works really well. And now I'm going to learn about that a little bit again soon, because Blaster Master comes out this Friday, but it doesn't support the Pro Controller yet. They're doing an update in like another week that's going to add Pro Controller support. I have no idea why that wasn't included from the get-go, because the game's been out in Japan for a week already, and apparently the folks in Japan were like, what the hell? Why can't we use the Pro Controller on this? And IniCreates was like, that's a good point. We should probably do that, because that's the controller with a D-pad, and this is an old-school 8-bit game. But I'm now really curious to see how I'm going to feel about playing that game with those four buttons instead of a D-pad.
Well, but that's just modern gaming, too. Like, I don't have to ship you a finished game.
Yeah, that is
true.
I'll just
add shit later.
That seems like such a strange thing to omit, though. Like, that controller support is like, I'm really weirded out by that. That's a very weird thing to omit. And at least they're fixing it. You know, it's a quick update, but what the hell, guys? That's a really strange thing to omit. So after my son went to bed, I had Karen and I play Puyo Tetris, and I gave her the Pro Controller because I didn't want to handicap her with making her have to figure out how to use four buttons instead of a D-pad. I know I can handle that, and I'm sure she could if it took a little time, but that's not something you want to throw at somebody who's not like a seasoned gamer, as it were.
Yeah, no, you want to jump in and have fun. You want to play.
Exactly. So, so I stuck with that, and I put him into the Joy-Con, the grip, which was the first time I'd ever really done that, like actually tried to play a game with it like that. Mm-hmm. And I definitely experienced the left Joy-Con grip disconnect issue that's been going on.
Oh, really?
And it's I understand it better now because I'd been reading about it, and they were saying it was a disconnect issue, and it's not like it's like you have to stop playing. It's like it cuts out for like a second, and then it jumps back in, and it was really, really messing me up when I was playing because I'd be, you know, holding left on the Joy-Con to, you know, move my piece to the left like two or three times, and it's registering that stuff when you're pressing the button, but it's not making it to the system. So then when it reconnects, it catches up on all them. Like if you're using a wireless keyboard, you press a whole bunch of buttons and your computer thinks about it for a second and then it catches up.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like that. So you're putting in all these inputs and then you're kind of correcting as if you're thinking the game's not going to get those inputs because that's just kind of naturally how my head works.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm pressing the buttons again. And then when it like a half a second later, it gets really quick, the intermittent like cutouts. And so a half a second later, it catches up on all those things, and then your pieces are in the completely wrong place because it's
it's
doing
still enough
all
to really mess up like a plan, especially with a game as that requires the precision of something like Tetris. Of
exactly,
I need to put this here. Like this is where it has to go.
I imagine
three spots
it wouldn't
to
be,
the left.
Yeah, I imagine it wouldn't be as big a problem in Zelda.
Right.
Because it would just cut off for a second, and it's like, oh, why is he walking that way? Okay, now we're back.
Right.
Because there are very few points in that game, at least as far as I've come across, that require holy crap precision as far as not falling off a cliff. Though I did fall off a cliff earlier tonight, which was a real pain in the ass. I'll get to that in a bit. we'll talk Zelda in a little bit. But so, yeah, that's an issue. The screen scratching by the dock is an issue. But so far, so good, I'd have to say. I like how fast it is. I like how easy it is to switch between accounts. I like being able to get to the Japanese eShop. I love the suspend feature. I love being able to take it anywhere in my house. I mean, the first day I played Zelda on the toilet, it was wonderful. I like it quite a bit, and I'm starting to really appreciate this launch schedule they've got going on. It's starting to make more sense to me. And it's really reminding me a lot of the way they did Splatoon. Like, you remember how they did Splatoon and they were like, all right, we're going to do a shitload of DLC with Splatoon. We're going to start you all here. And then we're just going to keep gradually adding shit for a long time.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what this feels like. Like, everyone's playing Zelda and a few people are playing 1-2 Switch. God bless them. And then there's other people playing Snipper Clips, which I'm really considering downloading the full game of because there's something about it that's not quite matching with me in my head. Like, there's something about it that's not like this is a must-buy,
but it's fun.
It's really smart. It's really, really clever. The demo is very impressive. But so I like how every week, so in a couple of days, I'm going to get Blaster Master, and I don't know how that makes the rest of the world feel, but me, that's like, that's almost as big as a release could get for me. That's right. Like, that is huge for me. So there's, I'm nowhere in Zelda. I'm especially compared to my friends. Like I'm flat out nowhere in that game compared to everybody else in the world. And, I'm going to have a new game in another week. And then like I put together a list of all the stuff that's coming out. I mean, 3.10, I got Blaster Master. Then on 3.2, I still haven't even downloaded Shovel Knight, Spectre of Torment. I really want to play it, but I'm going to get it for free on Wii U because I was a Kickstarter backer, but that's not until April. So I'm like, argh! But because like I really want to buy it on Switch. I just want to drop the $25 and get the whole treasure trove on Switch. And
because
eventually I'm going to want to retire that Wii U, and Shovel Knight's one of those things I'm going to want to have around, but I'm not ready to drop $25 on it yet. But then on 3.29, I get Snake Pass. And then on, they still haven't said exactly the date, but it seems possible Yooka-Laylee might come out on the same date as the other things. And if it does, that's April 11th. And then on April 18th, I'm getting Wonder Boy. Then on April 25th, I'm getting Puyo Puyo Tetris. Then on the 28th, I'm getting Mario Kart and Graceful Explosion Machine, because that looks fantastic. And that covers me through the end of April. And there's still a couple of other things, like they don't have release dates for the only other games on my list that are like, there's no date for Overcooked. I need to get that game. There's no dates for Celeste. That looks really good. Mr. Shifty looks really good. Space Dave looks really good. Splatoon 2 is in the summer. ARMS is in the spring. Runner 3 is not till freaking fall.
Which sucks, but suck. Also, let's be honest, you're not going to finish any of those games.
No, well, I'm going to finish Blaster Master Zero. I imagine it's not going to be super long, which makes me super happy. So I'll finish Blaster Master Zero. I'll probably be, and I'll definitely finish Wonder Boy because I know the game. You know, I finished it before. So I'll be able to finish those two games. But yeah, none of the other games I'm going to finish. I don't know. I saw a brief video of Zelda earlier today that had like a lot more of the map filled in. And I was just like, Jesus Christ, I am nowhere in this game. Like, the stuff I'm doing right now, I feel like the world is so huge. And then I saw this map, and I was like, I don't even... What? How am I supposed to remember where anything is? Oh, Jesus.
You gotta draw your own map, man.
It's we'll get to Zelda in a bit. I have so much to say about that game. Yeah, so this like gradual, consistent release schedule, they're not all blockbusters, but they're all stuff that's going to keep me interested. I mean, they announced Toe Jam and Earl's coming to this thing, which I'm so happy about. Monster Boy, even Sonic Mania looks good, fingers crossed.
But yeah, come on now.
I'll always give 2D Sonic a chance. I will always do that.
I don't know why. I haven't figured out why you will, but
I love those Genesis games. I think the Genesis Sonic games are great games, and I think that the Game Boy Advance ones were really good. I think the DS ones were really good. I don't think there's been a good Sonic game on a console for a while. No, Sonic Colors was pretty good, but even then, it was pretty good. It wasn't like as good as I think Sonic Rush on DS, but you know, Sonic 4 was okay, but this one isn't being developed by Sonic Team, so
it's just not a great idea. But anyway,
focus, Chris. Back to business. So, I guess that's essentially my feelings on the hardware so far. I'm happy with it. It's not flawless. It's got those issues. The screen protector thing, I'll live with. I don't really care. The rest of the dock, I think, is kind of clever. This is kind of neat. So I was always wondering how the back of the dock worked. You know, with the cables.
Mm-hmm.
And because they seem to go in to the side, and I didn't want them sticking out of the side. There's like a little trap door that opens in the back, and you close the trap door, and it bends the cables to stick out the back instead of the side. But because they're bending through the door on the dock, they're not putting pressure on the inputs. It's really quite clever. It's strange to see something that clever, and yet there's no padding on the inside of it to stop the dock from scratching the screen.
Yeah, that's just really weird. And for dropping $300 on something, there's an expectation there.
And not only worse
of
than
like
that,
the system is not going to damage itself. That's the expectation.
Worse than that, they sell that thing separately for $90.
That's crazy.
No effing way. You are out those. I hold that Pro controller and I'm like, that's a $70 controller. That thing feels solid. It feels, the analog sticks feel gorgeous. It is silky smooth. It is a wonderful, wonderful controller. So yeah, $70 is a bit spicy for a controller, but when you hold it, you don't think to yourself, yeah, that's not $70 worth of controller. It feels like it's worth the money, at least to me. But right. $90 for that dock, it's almost hollow. almost nothing in it.
That's ridiculous.
I'm mystified by that, because if they were $20, I'd have bought another one to put in the freaking bedroom.
Yeah.
I'd buy a stack of them to put on every TV I'll ever own. But
yeah, everybody else would, you know, like it.
That is just a strange, strange thing. That is probably the one piece of pricing that I understand the least, because, you know, you think about the Joy-Cons, for them being as small as they are with the amount of tech that's in them, mm-hmm. it's not a good price, but it's an understandable price. Like, if you just look at it on paper, like, I get it. You put a lot into those little tiny things. They're very impressive to an extent. They're not even to an extent. They're just very impressive. So I get the price. It's dumb that you should charge that, but it is still there. That dock is there's no way there's $90 worth of technology in that piece of plastic.
No, that's ludicrous.
Especially with that screen scratching problem. I am concerned about the Joy-Con issue with the syncing. I hope it's a software thing that can get fixed. It seems like it might be, but they haven't figured it out yet. And it is definitely an issue. So I guess we'll see where it goes from there. It's probably not going to be much of an issue for me in the long run because mm-hmm. I don't imagine there's going to be a lot of times in my life where I'm using them separately, except when I'm on the go, which isn't that often. Like,
right.
You know, when we go to the movies, I'll bring it and set it up and Karen and I can play Mario Kart together. But all in all, I'm not going to be doing tabletop mode all that much. And right. I plan on using some store credit I have at my local game store to get... I want to get more pro controllers. Like, I want, if people are going to be playing the Switch with me, I want them to be playing with pro controllers because mm-hmm. it's just such a nicer controller. And I'll just save up and get more of them over time. So that's how that's going to roll. But I give it a solid B, the actual console itself. I give it a solid B. Not quite a B plus, definitely not an A, bordering on a B minus, but. Because of just how generally nice it looks and feels, I'm gonna give it a solid B.
And that seems to be the general consensus right now is that it's good and it's got Zelda, but there's some things.
There's room and hopefully it's
stuff that can be fixed. I mean, you know, the PlayStation 4. Tomorrow as we record, so Thursday Thursday the 9th, you will finally be able to use external hard drives.
Wow, really?
Yeah, like that's being added tomorrow. So that's cool. You know what I mean? Like, the system's been out for a few years now.
Yeah, wow. But hey, you know what? This happens with every system, and nothing here it is does. A red ring of death.
No.
Like,
yet.
Yeah, I guess yet. But yes, so far, there's no red ring of death. Oh, I know I've definitely seen some people online. That's an issue. I don't want to spend much time talking about it, but that's definitely an issue I've run into seemingly a lot more lately, especially because because you're seeing like such great reviews for Zelda. Is the vocal folks on the internet that... The internet at large seems to take a very perverse pleasure in just trashing Nintendo. Like, there's lots to legitimately criticize. Trashing
everything.
Yeah, like there's people that trash everything. Right now, there's an awful lot. Like, there was a sizable contingent of people on, what was it, the Metacritic, mm-hmm. that were just giving Zelda zeros and ones. And, like...
People are just assholes.
Exactly, like, just to be assholes. There's a real loud group of people right now that are just like, Nintendo is dumb. They should burn in hell. It's like, dude, just let people enjoy themselves. Like,
just buy something else.
Yeah, seriously. I don't like the Xbox One. I don't begrudge anybody buying an Xbox One.
No, sure, buy it.
Go nuts. If that's what you like, live the dream. I don't care.
Why, I mean, we'll make fun of it, but like, that's kind of our job.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, end of the day, somebody walks up to me with a free Xbox One. I'm not turning that down.
No, I'm still going to take it. I want to play Cuphead.
Exactly. God, I want to play Cuphead. Please come to every other platform.
Right? I mean, like, I've legitimately considered trying to figure out a way to get an Xbox One. Not to buy one, but just to, like, have one for a little bit to play Cuphead.
I really want to play that game. I really do. That's it. I'm doing a little internet research. I got to know if that game is funded by Microsoft or if it's a... Because if it's not, like, actually made by Microsoft, it could be a timed exclusive.
I think it is. I think it will be. I don't believe it has anything to do with Microsoft. I could be way wrong, but I think it's on Steam as well.
Oh, yeah, if it's coming out on Steam, too. Nope, Developer Studio MDHR. That is not Microsoft, so yeah. Huzzah. I'm going to cross my fingers that's coming on other platforms.
Well, when it doesn't sell anything... they'll have to. Like, oh, see, there we go, being mean again. Aww. But no, you're right. Like, there is a lot of, like, I've seen a lot of Nintendo hate recently, and I've seen a lot of additional piling on to Microsoft of, like, Well, now Nintendo system is pretty good too. Like, fuck, man. I got this thing that, well, I can check my fantasy football scores, but that's not cool anymore. It's got a Kinect thing, sort of.
Nobody really cares, like, about that.
Yeah, like, I don't know. I've just seen, like, a lot of piling on, and, like, I don't know. Especially in this last week, because a new Nintendo system has come out, and people seem to be pretty pleased with it. People are gaga over the new Zelda. And then on the PlayStation side of things, Horizon Zero Dawn came out and is just running away with, like, well, game of the year, we're done. Thanks. That was awesome. Game of the year in fucking March. So we're just not going to do it. You know, like, people are loving that game. And Xbox is kind of like, well, there was a Halo RTS that came out, you know, yeah. So.
It's odd. It's kind of funny. It's reminding me a little bit of when Ocarina of Metal and Metal Gear Solid came out around the same time.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Those games were pretty close and released to one another. And now here we are again with, like, one of those two games is going to be Game of the Year. Like, it's going to be either Zelda or Horizon. I mean, I can't imagine what's going to come out for the rest of the year that's going to top either of these games. And
there's new God of War coming.
Yeah, but I don't. Unless they do something drastically different with the gameplay, it's super awesome. Like, I would argue that God of War is more awesome than anything else could possibly be. But if you're just judging it on as a game, like, it's going to be hard to top. At least from my experience, Zelda, it's going to be very hard to top.
We'll get there.
We'll get there. And in fact, we'll get there. We'll get there pretty soon. We're gonna take ourselves a quick break, and then we're gonna talk about Breath of the Wild, and then we're gonna talk about some of the other games coming out on the platform for the rest of the year, and see if we still feel the way we felt about it during the switchening. So, you are listening to the Stone Age Gamer podcast from Geekade.com. So stick around. And now, here's a look at some of the other original content available right now at Geekade.com. First up, do you like spiky animals?
Yes.
How about porcupine puns?
Yes.
Are you in the market for a villain-turned-hero who has modeled himself after nature's pincushion?
Surprisingly enough, yes.
Well then, Geekade's Jonathan Fugger has you covered with an article about Marvel's porcupine, a character you may not know very well, but soon will want to. Read how this oddball character graduated from Z-list to D-list, and welcome to the D-list, Porcupine.
I mean, like, it's legit. It's a thing that... just read it. Next, your monthly dose of tabletop gaming in podcast form is here with the latest episode of You Shall Not Pass Go. This time, the guys spend some time reflecting on Evan's unreasonably good performances in both Magic the Gathering and D&D, review Unearthed Arcana, and even issue a challenge to any and all listeners. Don't miss all the thrilling heroics in You Shall Not Pass Go, Episode 13, Dungeons of the Past, Stories of the Future.
Then, did you know that March is an excellent time for music? Well, Geekade's Janelle Hawks does, and she has brought us a list of some of the most interesting music to pay attention to every week this month, with new releases ranging from Depeche Mode to Jethro Tull. There's a crossover cover band I'd like to hear. There's a little something for everyone here. Check out Turn It Up. I just keep thinking about the absurdity of that.
That would be amazing.
Check out, you know what, just Depeche Mode covering Jethro Tull would be...
Or the other way, like, just the other way hungry around. Like the wolf with a lot of flute. It sounds amazing.
Check out Turn It Up, new music releases for March 2017, located in the Think Tank.
As an aside, last month, the new Jidenna record, or the full-length Jidenna record, finally came out. Jidenna, for those of you who don't recognize the name right away, did that Long Live the Chief song in the Luke Cage show. Mm-hmm. His fucking album is unreasonably good. It's insanely, insanely good. You should listen. Finally, there's a lot going on with the X-Men franchise these days, including the new Logan movie, the FX series Legion, the big Inhuman Mutant events in the comics, and more. So, of course, Jonathan and Patty have gathered together to discuss the state of the X-universes, and they even find some time to do some terrible Russian accents along the way, because... why not? Be sure to listen to Mutant Musings, Episode 8, Gene Got Hit with a Rock.
You can catch all this great stuff, plus tons of other articles, videos, podcasts, and more, right now at Geekade.com. And we're back. We still don't like Nazis here at the Starting Camera Podcast. Not a one of them. Not
a single. There wasn't a good one in the bunch.
Not one of them.
It was a whole bunch of rotten apples, I'll tell you what.
what a bunch of assholes.
I feel like I know it's a bold stand for us to take, Chris, but I think coming right out and saying, Stone Age Gamer, we don't support Nazism, I'm comfortable with that.
I'm glad you're comfortable with saying that.
Well, we don't take a lot of political stands here, but I think that's one that we can solidly
draw a line in the sand there. Nazis? That's right. No. No, thank you.
Nazis over there. Just have a sign out front of the store that says Nazis that way. Fucking arrow pointing. You're not welcome.
Yeah, seriously. If you're not good enough for Indiana Jones, you're not good enough for us.
That's right. You're welcome, Ryan.
That's right. So let's talk a little bit about Breath of the Wild.
Okay.
Now, you had... What was what you said to me before? I said I'd never played anything quite like it. And you asked me, was it because it's something new or was it because I've never played Skyrim?
Yes.
And I'm going to say that it is... I think I've been able to better articulate my thoughts and... I've played a little bit of Skyrim. I've played a little bit of some Elder Scrolls stuff, and I know that it is, at least to my knowledge, it has always felt more limited than what you can do in Breath of the Wild.
Which is everything, from what I understand.
I just, okay, climb a tree. Okay, cut it down. Okay, set it on fire.
Why not? Do it.
That was like the first, my sister came over to play it. It was like the first thing she did. She's like, ooh, I can set things on fire. And then she's just setting fields on fire. you set a fire. If the grass is dry and the wind picks up, there's fire everywhere.
Just burn it all down. She's Hyrule.
Cutting down like tree after tree. Like she went through like three axes. And it takes a while to break an axe on a tree. She went through like three axes just cutting down every tree she could get her hands on.
Well, damn, she's a Republican, so fuck nature. It's just really what it comes down to.
You just said we don't take political stances.
Oh, I'm sorry. My bad. I'll pull that back a little bit. She's a libertarian. How about that? Is that better?
The description that I'll give it is that it is like Skyrim, but through Nintendo's eyes.
Mm-hmm.
So it feels so much more baked. I've always felt like some of the Bethesda games, like Skyrim, they always don't feel like completely baked. Like there's this certain disconnect that like you're always looking at that and feeling like, okay, but if I look down, I'm not going to see my feet, or like I'm playing a video game. Like the animation.
I've never cared for them, so like you're not going to offend me.
I'm more concerned with being inaccurate because I've never played one of those and felt like it was something that was for me, which was, I've talked about on the show before, was kind of a concern I had with Breath of the Wild, that I would be playing this game and it would just not work for me. Like, I was afraid of the whole cooking element, the survival element of this whole thing.
Right.
And it hasn't even come close to being an issue. In fact, I love the cooking element is ridiculous. It's just... it's stupid fun. Like, you just find food and animal bits all over the place. Like, the world is very alive, and not just with monsters that want to kill you. It's alive with just wildlife. There's birds everywhere, and wildlife, and frogs, and fish. And you can just see fish in a river. You can just jump in and try to grab them, which has worked for me more often than I think it should, or I just kind of go up and grab a bunch of fish.
No, that's actually how you do it.
That's just
like everybody with fishing poles is just doing it wrong.
That's how Link rolls.
You got to go up there and take the fish. It's like Pepe Le Pew.
But I mean, you can like the hunting and whatnot. You see a ram or a deer or something running through the woods, and you're just standing there eating, and you're like, "Well, I bet I could kill that. So you bust out the bow and arrow, get a headshot, and it just turns into meat.
Well, there you go.
Take that meat, you find a campfire, and you cook it. And then you can then take that cooked meat, or even just before you cook it, just take like the raw meat. And then you found some mushrooms and some herbs, and you just throw all that in a little pot thing, and then it turns into a dish. And that dish has different effects, like either it'll give you a heart or five hearts, or it'll give you like an endurance boost or all sorts of other status effects. It's really fun.
So it is the Ernest Hemingway of video games now? It is an authentic experience? That was a fucking deep cut, by the way.
Wow. Nicely done.
That's all right.
It reminds me of a more accessible Monster Hunter, too, in that respect.
Okay.
I know that there's a lot of that kind of stuff in Monster Hunter, like foraging and whatnot, and I've never been able to get Monster Hunter to click with me. I've tried it a couple of different times, and for some reason this... It just does it right. It does all these things that other games have tried to do, and it does it right. The combat system is way deeper than it's been in any other Zelda game. Well, not way deeper, but it's... You don't just get sword and here is your sword. Like, you're going to break swords all the time in this game, and you're going to break shields, and a lot of the times you're not even going to have a sword. You're going to get in a fight with a group of bokoblins, and then you're just going to pick up their clubs, and then you've got clubs running around, and you could either set them on fire and throw them at them, which is really fun because bokoblins are remarkably flammable.
It's like they're made out of gasoline.
Seriously, you throw stuff that's on fire at them and they just kind of burst into flames and run around screaming. I've never really played anything quite like it. It really does remind me a lot of... You can really see that DNA between this game and the original Zelda game. And, mm-hmm. I mean, like, one of the first stories that really... Besides the fact that I've killed myself a bunch of times.
Right.
I've died a lot in this game. It is not super easy. One of the first things that really kind of just warped my mind a little bit on this game was... Earlier on in the game, you're trying to find these four temples that are on this plateau that you start the game in. Mm-hmm. And I found one of them was up on top of this mountain. And so I just went climbing. And as I got higher up in the mountain, like, you heard a little Christmas jingle sound. And the game says, it's getting cold out here. You're probably going to freeze. And I'm like, okay, whatever. So
fuck you, game.
So I kept going, and then, like, my hearts are dropping, and Link is shivering, and I'm like, oh, shit, I'm going to die. So I got the hell out of there. And then I'm trying to figure out, like, what the hell am I supposed to do? Like, how am I can't find any other, there's no shops around here. I haven't even seen another person besides the mysterious old man, because you're stuck on this plateau in the beginning of the game. And I'm like, all right, so what the hell do I do? And eventually I figured out that there's food that you can cook that'll keep you warm for a long, it'll give you a warmth boost if you cook like a bunch of stuff with spicy peppers. And so, like, just the fact that I was gonna freeze to death up on the mountains because I wasn't wearing the right clothes was like, well, shit, all right, this is pretty neat, I guess. If it's raining, you can't climb mountains as well because shit gets slippery. I get that, that's nice. And then I got up there, I made it towards that thing, and then I noticed that there was like, so here's the temple entrance, but then over to my left, there was like another peak of the mountain. I'm like, well, I came this far. Let's see what's up there first.
Like,
I still got another minute and change left on this like warmth boost. So I'm just going to go for it. And then I made it up to the top, and the old man's up there waiting for me. Like, he basically said, wow, you're crazy. You climbed all the way up here. Here's a coat. It's like, yes, I got new clothes. That stuff's really cool. There's so much I'm really impressed with about this game. The amiibo functionality is pretty neat too. Like, I did the whole you scan the Wolf Link one from Twilight Princess in there, and you get mm-hmm. your wolf as like a buddy.
That's and cool.
That was really great because he's just running around with me and fighting bad guys. Except, do you know what I mean when I say the guardians in this game?
No.
They're the big robot things, like in the original trailer that were chasing after Link and shooting lasers at him.
Okay.
So, like, those things are dangerous. They
seemed it.
They will mess up your life. And at least early on, I know I've seen some crazy videos of people killing them now. But so I was at this area where there was a handful of guardians behind a wall, and they wouldn't get up and move, but they would wake up and shoot lasers at me. Mm-hmm. So I scanned my Wolf Link amiibo, and I'm just running along. And then all of a sudden, he barks and he runs off. And I'm like, where are you going? What is he doing? And I see him run like behind this wall. And then I hear a sound, and then I see this giant explosion, and then his life completely depleted and dead. It's like, what? What, you stupid dog, what the shit?
God damn it.
And you can't scan him again for another day, because you can only scan him once a day. I'm like, damn it. He just ran right over to a guardian because he thought he could beat it up and got blown the fuck up.
That's great. Kind of awesome, though.
It was fantastic. I was laughing my ass off. And like the Smash Brothers Link amiibo that looks like the Link from Twilight Princess, you can keep scanning him and you'll get different outfit pieces to make Link look like he did in Twilight Princess. Or
oh, that's cool.
The 30th anniversary amiibos, like, because what you do is you scan an amiibo and it drops a whole bunch of like loot, and then the Zelda ones specifically, they'll drop a treasure chest too, and they'll always have something cool in them. And in fact, the Smash Brothers one, you scan it and you get Epona, like the horse Epona from Ocarina of Time, mm-hmm. and Twilight Princess, which is, you can find wild horses in the game, and then you can bring them to a stable, and that's how you like link them to you, and you can also name them. And so the guy's going through the spiel, it says new horse, and you say yes, and then he starts to give you the spiel of what to name Epona. It's like half my mid-sentence. He's like, whoa, wait a second. This is like the legendary horse Epona, the one that the legendary hero rode. You can't rename that. That's like a crime. Then it gives you the option to rename it anyway, but I was like, oh, I'll keep it Epona. That's great. It's a good name.
So is this more like a mainstream version of a Team Ico game? Does that feel like a more accurate comparison? Or is this really just the natural evolution of what Zelda is?
I haven't played the new one yet, The Last Guardian,
right?
But the world is so much more populated.
That's what I'm saying. Like when I say mainstream, I like not as arty, like a more accessible kind of thing, because I don't know, I get kind of a Shadow of the Colossus feel from like those Guardian things.
I mean, maybe
just like
to an extent. It definitely has more of a flavor of it presentation wise, like does have that kind of arty style to it. Mm-hmm. And it also, the music is very similar in that it's very minimalist,
right?
There's very few situations, at least so far, where you're going to go there and there's just going to be like background music playing. It's all very flowy and very minimalist. So I guess I could see that, but it's definitely larger and definitely more alive, because you do, like, there's people everywhere in this game, which is really kind of cool. Like, after you get off the plateau, I encountered my first person. He was just like a dude on a bridge. And then I've just been playing the game at random adventuring, and there's just people walking around, like, just out for a walk, traveling from town to town. And you can talk to them, and they'll try to sell you some shit or whatever, or just say thank you for saving them from a bunch of bokoblins. But there's just, like, people. The world is so much more alive than it's ever been in a Zelda game. In fact, it's the most... The towns are so populated and organic. It reminds me a bit of Zelda 2 in that respect. How, like, you know, if you think about Zelda games, there's usually like one or two towns, you know, there's the castle town, there's Kakariko Village.
And they have like three houses and
exactly,
four people you can talk to.
It does never really feels like the best town, I think, was probably the one in Majora's Mask as far as the 3D Zelda is concerned. Like Clock Town was very, but they're all even better than Clock Town. And there seems to be at least a different groups of civilizations similar to there was in Zelda 2, where you just go to all these different towns and there's all these houses and people doing different things. Kakariko Village, for example, was just, that's the first like actual village I got to, and it's so much more of a thing. There's topography, there's houses built on hills, and the houses all look different, and there's, you know, clotheslines, there's things hanging. It's very organic. It doesn't seem like just a collection of houses. It's it looks like here is an area and they built the houses around the geography of the area instead of like here is a town. It's really quite remarkable the way it's pieced together. And there's like a lot of houses you can go in that don't have anything in them at all. They're just I'm at this other town and there's two windmills there. So I went over to the windmills and I opened the doors and went inside and there's nothing in there because they're just fucking windmills. But it's also, it's not like you in other Zelda games where you open up the door, you go in and things go black and they reopen inside. It's seamless. You open the door and you're inside. Like the actual contents of the house, there's 100% spatial reasoning in those houses because you open the door and it's right there. It's just seamless entering into the house. The walls are where they would be on the outside. So it's the spatial reasoning of the villages is 100% spot on, and it's really quite remarkable.
Now, you have this on the Switch. You haven't, obviously, you don't have it on the Wii U.
I do.
What's that?
I do.
I lost you.
I do. I have it on Wii U.
Do you really?
I did. I haven't opened it yet, but I bought it because I figured it was going to turn into a Twilight Princess situation. Like the GameCube one was, I bought that one when it came out too, because I had a feeling that it was going to go hard to find later, and it did. And Zelda's one of those game series that I have almost every single release of. So I figured it was worth picking up with, you know, I had the store credit over at the Level Up, my game store, that I couldn't use on pretty much anything Switch related because they got shorted like everything.
Oh, sure.
So I was like, all right, I'm gonna get Breath of the Wild on Wii U too. I'm gonna get that now, so I don't have to think about it later. But right. No, I haven't tried it yet. But go on.
Well, cause I was curious as to like what you think of what you've seen online about the comparisons, because I will probably end up getting Breath of the Wild digitally for the Wii U, because like you said, it'll be harder to get, you know, physically, and unless I do that relatively soon. Do you like, have you seen any of the comparison shots, like, or any of the videos?
It doesn't seem like there's much of a difference.
It really doesn't. Does that disappoint you at all, or?
It doesn't surprise me. I mean, really, when you get right down to it, there wasn't much of a difference between GameCube Twilight Princess and the Wii Twilight Princess. I mean, the Wii one ran in widescreen and had the motion controls, but actual performance-wise, it was almost the same. I mean, this game was, it is a Wii U game that was ported to Switch, you know?
Right.
And to me, it doesn't really seem like an accurate reflection of what the system is capable of, because it doesn't seem like this wasn't designed on from the ground up for the Switch, you know what I mean?
Right, right.
And it doesn't really disappoint me at all. One piece that does, it's not even really a disappointment, but I understand why some people are disappointed, is the fact that they, even on the Wii U version, they took out all the touch screen stuff. Like, the games are damn near identical. And I never really cared for the touch screen stuff. A lot of people are saying that Nintendo's reasoning for that was kind of a cop-out, where they were saying that the it really kind of breaks the concentration when you have to look down to another screen to do the menu type stuff. And everyone's like, oh, but it works so great on, you know, Wind Waker HD and whatnot. And I actually kind of felt that it didn't. I'm completely in the camp of that does break me out of it. In fact, even holding the gamepad to play games, I don't like doing, because then I have this glowing screen in my peripheral vision the whole time.
Right.
And that kind of bothers me. So when I played, I think I've said it on the show before, when I played Wind Waker HD, I would set the screen, the tablet controller up on its stand on the coffee table in front of me and just have that as my map and play with the Pro Controller.
Yeah.
Because to me, that was the best way to play that. Twilight Princess HD, I never play it with the gamepad. I just do it all manually with the Pro Controller, because I'd rather pause it and go to a menu then take my eyes off the main screen to fiddle with touch controls for moving menu things around. Like, I don't mind moving a cursor. If I have a proper D-pad or even buttons that can just digitally move from one point to another, that doesn't bother me in the least. In fact, I vastly prefer it.
Right.
So I know a lot of people say thought that was a cop-out. I don't know if maybe it is, because that Nintendo was all about those touchscreen controls for those other two games. But I always thought that was kind of dumb. Not dumb. I mean, it was clever, I guess, but I liked that they had the option to not use that, because I never wanted to. So I think it's great that it's perfectly doable on the Wii U, just because that was the promise. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, this is a Wii U game. It's neat that it's a Switch launch title, and anybody who bought the Switch has this great game to play, with the added bonus of it being, like, suspend state and pick up and put down whenever you want that you don't have on the Wii U. But at the same time, for anyone who didn't luck out in getting a Switch or didn't have the money for a Switch or just doesn't want a Switch and got the Wii U for the promise of this Zelda game, I love the fact that it's been delivered on completely. And unlike the GameCube one that in some ways felt gimped compared to the Wii Twilight Princess, it's good that I think it's almost exactly the same.
Yeah, I think I'm kind of in agreement there as well. Like, it would have been really shitty if, like, the Switch version were so much better. And it was like, well, fuck, man. You know, like...
Yeah.
Now, getting off of this for a second, unless you have a lot more to say about it.
No, I mean, I could go on and on, but it's just freaking cool.
It's just good.
Like, it's just good.
It's just a damn good game. Tiffany and I were talking, and, like, obviously this thing is selling out, like, crazy, and, you know, it's going to be hard to find and all that stuff. And Breath of the Wild is being heralded as the last Wii U game, like the last big Wii U title.
Yeah, it's definitely the last Nintendo published.
What do you think are the chances of Super Mario Odyssey coming to the Wii U?
I don't think that's going to happen at all. I mean, Nintendo doesn't have a lot to gain by doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, I'm pretty sure one of the purposes of Mario Odyssey is to sell Switches. Like, that's the goal. I think that's why they're holding it until Christmas. Because from what I've come to understand, that game is basically done.
Right.
And they're just like, this is going to be our Christmas game. And it's not going to get pushed back because it's basically done. And we're just going to put it on the shelf. And then come Christmas, we'll have ironed out a bunch of problems with the Switch. Then we'll sell it with Super Mario Odyssey and go. And also, it seems to be that this game was designed from the ground up with the Switch architecture in mind, mm-hmm. as opposed to Zelda, which was designed as a Wii U game and then ported over. And from what I've come to understand, that architecture on Switch is different from Wii U and considerably better. So, I don't think that's... I would be beyond shocked if Super Mario Odyssey came out on Wii U.
Something would have had to go very wrong for that.
Yeah, something would have had to go wrong.
It was just an interesting question of, like, you know, if this is going, like, if sales are going and all that good stuff. But
yeah,
it was just something I was curious about your opinion.
Yeah, I wouldn't imagine it's something that would happen. It would be very strange for it to happen. Judging by the way the Switch is moving right now, it's going to have a good year. I'm still not 100% convinced that this thing is going to do better than the Wii U long term. Like, I don't know
well
if it's going to outsell it lifetime.
That's kind of where the next question goes of, like, mm-hmm. all right, so you have this now. Obviously, the potential is there because the potential is there for anything.
Mm-hmm.
Is this the one?
Well, I mean, I'm already hearing that stores are getting Switches back in stock.
Well, that's a good sign.
Something I was expecting. Toys R Us and GameStop are supposed to be getting more of them next week, which I was not expecting that in the least. I was really expecting this to be a pretty significant drought. So, it really depends a lot on how their supply chain goes. But when we're looking at, you know, looking down the road, there's a couple of different ways this can go. And this really hasn't changed a whole lot since we talked about it, at least I don't think.
Right.
You've got them talking about how they've got this great third-party support, and so far we're still not seeing it.
Right.
It's nice that EA has clarified that FIFA Switch is going to be, you know, it's the next FIFA game, and it's going to be an original thing designed with the Switch architecture in mind and not just a port from the Xbox 360 version. So that's promising that they're putting effort into it. And if there are enough consoles out there, definitely worldwide, it seems very plausible that it could do well on the platform. I'm still not sure who's buying it, if it's just Nintendo fanatics or not, because
mm-hmm.
the people that were in line at Walmart when I bought my system were not there because it was the new Nintendo system. They were there because it was the cool new thing,
right,
which surprised me because I didn't think this system was going to sell to anybody that wasn't a diehard Nintendo fan. But there were two other people that had the system pre-ordered. One of them was a Nintendo nut like me, and the other one was somebody that just needed to have the hot new tech. Like, this is the new game system. I can play it anywhere. I got to get that new Zelda game. It looks hot. And he was somebody who's, he's got an Xbox One and a PS4 at home. So he had just had to have the new thing. That person I didn't think was going to exist because I figured anybody that has a PS4 and an Xbox One isn't going to give a shit about the Switch. But I was wrong. And then there was another family that, and I'm still reeling over this. There was I mentioned in the blog post I wrote that there was a family that came up to the counter where I was waiting with the other pre-order customers, that was from up front in the line of people who didn't have pre-orders, and they had convinced one of the employees to bring them back there so they could look at the games. And the first thing they grabbed was 1-2 Switch. And they were like, oh, man, I heard about this game. You can do, like, the quick draw and whatnot. And it was two, like, 12, 13-year-old kids and their mom. And I was like, wait, what? What?
You're not excited for this. Stop it.
Why is a kid around 12 or 13 excited about this game? Like, and I heard people talking about it in line, too. Like, oh, I got to get 1-2 Switch. It's like, you know, all this weird samurai stuff, and it looks really fun. And I'm sitting here thinking, like, what? Why? How are you real?
Just what do we know, Chris?
What exactly? Nothing. What do we know?
We're two schmucks with a podcast.
There's no way this game's going to catch on the way Wii Sports did. It's already hasn't. Yeah. And I still don't believe that it's some of the pricing on this stuff, man. That game for $50 is insanity. $50 for Bomberman is nuts.
Yeah, because I really want to play that game. Downloadable title. That's what that is.
That game right there. I forget which review I was reading, but they pointed out that the Xbox Live, Xbox 360 Bomberman had more content than this game, and it sold for $10 on Xbox Live, and they want $50 for this Switch version, which looks great. I would buy this if it was $20. I would have bought it. I would have said, Take my money. I will give Bomberman a serious chance because it just looks fun. And I've never really given that franchise the respect it deserves or spent the time with it that I know I would enjoy it. So Street Fighter, that's going to be $40?
That's 20 too much.
Exactly. You've got to be kidding me. It's Street Fighter 2.
It's 20 too much.
Like that way of the Hado, whatever you pronounce that little first person thing, like that's adorable, but there's no way that's worth that money.
No.
So I don't know. There's so many strange things happening. And if you look at the lineup long-term, like they did that indie showcase and I was like, holy crap, I am set for the year. Yeah. I am just set. I was just running down the list earlier. Like I've got games. I've got 25 games. There's 26 games that are scheduled to come out this year that I legitimately want to play, and at least 20 of them are games that I'm willing to spend money on. That's insane to me that there's that many games coming out this year that I'm going to want to play. Now, granted, a chunk of them are indie titles, and I mean, yeah, Yooka-Laylee is technically an indie title, but that's like a full-fledged game. That's a big game. But I mean, smaller stuff like Toe Jam and Earl and Celeste and even Runner 3, which I still can't believe that's a Switch exclusive. It's got to be timed, just like Cuphead. It's got to be timed. Like, it doesn't bother me because I have a Switch and I'm obsessed with Runner. But I feel like it's strange that that game wouldn't be coming to other platforms.
The Bit Trip Saga is on PlayStation and Xbox.
Mm-hmm.
Like
Runner 2
the Bit Trip or whatever.
Everywhere, yeah.
Yeah, like it's got to be a timed exclusive. Because companies like Nintendo is going to find themselves in the place where they were the last console generation, where you don't have enough market share to make third party exclusives a viable business strategy.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
really few people have that now. Like, right. Third parties in general aren't really exclusive.
No. I mean, like, Gears of War is.
But, I mean, that's a first-party title. Even if a third party is developing it, Microsoft right. owns that name.
Yeah.
But, like, Sony got Street Fighter V, but outside of that, like, what other third-party exclusives are there that aren't published by the first parties?
Yeah, it's just not really a thing anymore, which is great. Mm-hmm. Like, exclusivity is... should be reserved for first party stuff. Like, that's why you buy a PlayStation or an Xbox or a Nintendo for the first party games.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to have to then also decide on, like, well, we could only get this game here, you know, like, it's just, that's,
it's like the conversation we were just having about Cuphead. Stupid. Like, yeah. that makes me sad because, like, that's not a first party developed Microsoft game. And but it's technically a third-party exclusive, just like a couple of these other things on the Switch. But also, they got so many timed exclusives, too, which I was really impressed with.
Yeah.
Like, they even flat-out said it, like, it's first on Switch. And, I mean, I don't personally care about it, but the fact that they got the multiplayer of Stardew Valley first on Switch, that's a pretty big get. Like,
that is a big get, yeah. People like that game. I don't know why, guys. But... So, it's just not for me, but that, you know.
So I guess for the rest of the year, the question is, what do they have up their sleeves? Is E3 going to be just Super Mario Odyssey, or are there going to be a bunch more game announcements? Because, like, right now, I don't know almost anything coming out in 2018 with the exception of that Fire Emblem game.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I need to see. I want to see what they need to show off this year is that there is not just them saying there's a future, but there's an actual planned future that includes third-party titles other than these indie games, which indie games are great, but at the end of the day, they're still not going to be system sellers.
Right.
Like, Blaster Master Zero is the friggin' world to me, but that's like the world to me and six other guys. Like, people will buy it, but it's not going to sell systems.
Blaster Master Zero is not why you drop $300 on a new system.
No, it's not. But it's odd that I'm so much more excited for that than almost anything else on the platform.
That is kind of silly.
Because it was the same way with me with Wii U. Like, hooray, Wii U, I got to have Runner 2. Like, that was my number one game I needed to have on Wii U was Runner 2. Like, that's to have. So funny. And that game made me happy every day.
You're a silly boy.
I am.
Well, I am very happy that you are happy with your system. You know, like I said, I'll end up with one eventually because my kids keep, like, their excitement for things like Super Mario Odyssey has not abated. So
yeah, I would imagine that come Christmas time is going to be a good time to get a Switch. Like, I definitely wouldn't recommend getting one right now. I wouldn't recommend jumping through the hoops to get one right this very minute unless you're a big Blaster Master fan.
Well, I am, but I'll play it on the 3DS.
Yeah, see, I had to play that on TV. I have to play it on a TV.
Oh.
I'm so excited to play that on a TV. But yeah, you know, play it on 3DS, obviously. Yeah, that's where I'm at right now. I still feel in my heart that this is not going to go well for them long term. If this right. is what they have, and what I suspect is true, that they've shown almost all of their cards,
right?
And that this is just what we have. And man, if they don't come out swinging at E3, they're in trouble. Or near E3. It doesn't have to be at E3. It has to be some sort of Nintendo Direct at some point that shows us what 2018 looks like for the Switch. And if they don't do something like that, then I don't see how this thing is going to do very well. It's
no, it's got they have to show it 2018, and there has to be Metroid.
Oh my god!
That's what there has to be. Like there has to be. You know,
you're not wrong.
It has to be there. There's no other franchise that will give you even if it's announced for like Christmas of 2018, like full like year and a half away after E3, that will be enough. That will buy them enough goodwill. That one title.
Yeah, just knowing that it's coming and having it, and it can't be Other M. Like, it has to be smart.
No, it has to be Metroid.
It has to be Metroid, and it has to not be, because they've done so far it seems a very good job of not tying their games to gimmicks.
Right.
And Other M had a very big problem with, one, a god-awful story, but two, also being tied to you have to play it with the Wii Remote turned sideways.
Right.
That was a bad... There was a bunch of bad decisions around Other M, and we haven't seen another Metroid game since, I think largely because of that. Now, if they... It's got to be a good Metroid game.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if they're going to follow through on these Wii U ports, they should really announce them soon. Like, if they're going to do Smash on this, make it happen soon and let us know what's going on with those last couple of Amiibo that they haven't announced. If they're going to upport, if they're going to bring over stuff like Bayonetta and Star Fox, like, they should do that soon. Because, you know, Wii U upports, I don't think they're going to be a real viable solution for filling in release gaps for a very long time. And something like Star Fox Zero with good controls, like that could be great. That would be a good move. Bayonetta 2 on Switch would also be a good move, because you don't have a game like that on your platform right now, and almost nobody played it on Wii U. So
It would be smart, but there has to be Metroid.
I agree.
There is Switch no other franchise Metroid that Nintendo can pull out, not Kid Icarus, not Donkey Kong, not fucking anything, that will have the cachet that Metroid has.
You're right. A really good-looking Metroid game on Switch.
It'll buy them 2 years.
Because they're blowing Mario and Zelda year one.
Yeah.
Like, Zelda's already here, and it's as good as I could have hoped. And Mario looks amazing. It's a return to a form of Mario we haven't seen in a long time. So the other big gun they have is Metroid. Those are their three bigs.
Yeah, it's Mario, Metroid, Zelda. Holy Trinity. So
if they hit us with a proper Metroid, or at least announce that they're working on one, say that it's coming. Like you said, it could even be a little ways off, but that's extremely important. And in the meantime, get AM2R up and running. Put that on the eShop.
Right, Jesus.
Sell that. Give that man and his team some money.
Right.
Make that
all the money.
Yeah. Put that for sale on your platform. Do a little spit shine, quality test it, and get it on the Switch. Make that game for sale. All right, that's enough.
Good night.
That's it. Show over.
All right, I'm done.
Do you have any other final thoughts? Any other questions you want to ask about games? Puyo Tetris is great, man.
I don't. I'm sure it is. It's Tetris.
Puyo Tetris is great. I don't know what any of this shit is. The demo seems to be pretty in-depth, but I can't read any of it. And all the text is Japanese.
I know. I play Puzzle and Dragons in Japanese. Shit happens. People send me messages, and I just look at them and go, yeah, I don't fucking know what any of this. You could be calling me a fucking cock knocker. I have no idea. And there are ways around it. There are websites you can go to that will tell you what dungeons they are, but I don't even know what the dungeons I'm getting into, because I don't bother to look. my Japanese account is, I happen to pull a very strong card for they give free rolls and different things. So when they had the heroin rare egg machine, I pulled the Meridianalis card, and I know none of this means anything to you, but she is ridiculously overpowered for 95% of the game. So for 95% of the content, it actually doesn't matter what it is, because I'm just going to destroy it anyway. You know, but there are certain dungeons where I enter it and it's like, well, that was 50 stamina wasted. I have to use this other team now. And I could have looked at the website. I just don't bother to, you know. But everything's in the same place as it is in the American version. So it's just muscle memory at that point.
Okay.
All right. You already said goodnight. Good night. Facebook. Okay. Social media. Bye.
Case closed. That's our show. Join us next week when I don't know. Let's just say it now. And if we change our minds in the middle of the week, please don't hate us. But next week, we're going to say our proper goodbyes and do a Wii eulogy. It's, you know, the Zelda has come out. It's officially Nintendo's last published game for the console. So we're going to take a look back on the life and times of the Wii U and put it to rest in our minds. So
not going to be pretty.
It probably won't, because the Wii U was not the prettiest console I've ever seen.
Nope.
Once again, you can get in touch with us at mail@geekade.com, as well as all flavors of social media that we inhabit. You can like us on Facebook, find us on Instagram at Geekade, subscribe to our YouTube and Twitch channels for all our latest video content, and follow us on Twitter at @_Geekade. You can also find us individually on Twitter. I'm at Geekade Chris, that's Geekade K-R-I-S, and Dan is at
Geekade Dan.
If you're interested in more information about anything we discussed here tonight, be sure to check out our show notes. And while you're at it, you can also subscribe to this and any of other wonderful podcasts on iTunes or Stitcher, or if you're super nice, you can leave us a review, because any and all feedback is welcome and appreciated. We'd like to thank our intrepid editor, Evan, but he's not here, so we won't. Then we'd like to thank Mark TDK Knight for our show's theme. You can check him out on SoundCloud or Bandcamp, or his website, which we'll have linked to again in the show notes. Always remember to keep your eyes on Geekade.com, where we post something new every single day. On behalf of myself and Dan, keep playing games. We'll be right back.